On this Cyber Monday, the president-elect is shaping his economic team, and two companies are preparing to go public in the midst of the pandemic.
Market conditions this year have been much better, particularly in the second half of the year.
We'll take a closer look at the big money involved as Airbnb and DoorDash prepare their IPOs. And overseas, the biggest names in tech face tough new regulations.
Now what the EU is trying to do is regulate how online platforms behave in terms of having other companies on their platforms.
And as we spend yet another month away from the office, some quick remedies if you're still working from your kitchen table. It's Monday, November 30th. I'm Mark Stewart with The Wall Street Journal, and this is What's News. This weekend after Thanksgiving proved to be the busiest travel period in the U.S. since the start of the pandemic, despite the pleas to stay at home. And public health officials fear there will be an uptick in the number of coronavirus cases. The nation's top infectious disease expert, Dr. Anthony Fauci, said on ABC's This Week that he did not see a sudden relaxation of recommendations or restrictions ahead of Christmas travel.
When you have the kind of inflection that we have, it doesn't all of a sudden turn around like that. So clearly in the next few weeks, we're going to have the same sort of thing, and perhaps even 2 or 3 weeks down the line.
U.S. shoppers went online to purchase holiday gifts and score Black Friday deals, with the number of people visiting stores roughly half compared to last year. That's according to research firms that track foot traffic. Online spending jumped 22% from a year ago, and today, being Cyber Monday, is expected to be a record-setting day. The former chief executive of the online shoe retailer Zappos, Tony Hsieh, passed away on Friday at age 46 from injuries sustained in a house fire on November 18th. Hsieh retired from Zappos in August and was known as an internet pioneer who changed the face of digital retailing, becoming a frequently quoted and studied management guru. We are reporting that S&P Global, the historic financial information group, is in talks to acquire London-based data firm IHS Markit for around $44 billion, according to people familiar with the matter. The all-stock deal would combine two of the largest providers of data to Wall Street. And President-elect Joe Biden has filled out the rest of his economic team alongside his nominee for Treasury Secretary, Janet Yellen, as he prepares to confront the economic fallout from the coronavirus pandemic. Neera Tanden would serve as director of the Office of Management and Budget, while Cecilia Rouse would become the first woman of color to chair the Council of Economic Advisers. We are exclusively reporting Airbnb and DoorDash are planning to release higher-than-expected valuation ranges as they prepare to go public in mid-December, typically a quiet month for offerings. For a closer look at what's providing this momentum, let's bring in markets columnist Mike Bird in Hong Kong. Hello again, Mike.
Hello, Mark.
So, Mike, according to people familiar with the offerings, Airbnb is planning a target range of around $30 billion to $33 billion, DoorDash at a range of around $25 to $28 billion. Is this a reflection of the changes in our everyday living?
I think it is, yeah, and I think it's particularly interesting. DoorDash might be a fairly obvious beneficiary of the pandemic and the lockdowns. People don't want to eat out as much in restaurants. They are ordering more food to home. That's fairly easy to understand. Airbnb is a little bit more interesting. You might have thought that Airbnb would do very badly from a lack of domestic and international travel this year, but it's actually been a beneficiary of the dismal time that the hotel industry is having. People prefer to stay perhaps within their household with long-term rentals and rentals in people's homes, which obviously Airbnb provide and the hotel industry does not.
And Mike, a bit of a head scratcher, even with the pandemic and the economic struggles, why are companies still looking to go public and how can they get investors?
Well, the bottom line is that market conditions this year have been much better, particularly in the second half of the year, than I think anyone would have plausibly expected back in sort of March and April. The Federal Reserve's support for investors has been huge, and it's allowed companies to continue going public at a time when even economic conditions are very poor. Things are being developed as well to get around some of the usually more physical activity that you'd associate with a company going public. So DoorDash, for example, is taking bids from investors on an online platform built by Goldman Sachs, who are helping them to IPO. Basically, investors can put in their bids, say how many shares they want, and DoorDash is able to price its IPO based on that sort of information. That's the sort of information you usually get from the roadshows that the company did ahead of time. So they'd be going around physically to investors and having conversations with them, building up an understanding of what they might want and what they might pay. These are things that you can't do this year. So there's been developments that the companies and banks have come into that are sort of circumventing these things.
Mike Bird, appreciate the context. Have a good week.
Thanks very much, Mark.
Just ahead, the new international push to regulate American tech companies and the severe penalties they could face overseas. We'll talk to our reporter in Brussels after a quick break. We've been talking on the show a lot lately about efforts in Washington to regulate big tech companies like Facebook, Google, and Twitter. But the U.S. isn't the only place where those conversations are happening. We report that in the European Union, regulators are finalizing new rules for online platforms. Officials say penalties could include sanctions or even, as a last resort, breaking up the businesses. For a closer look at what this means and how it could impact these big American tech companies, let's bring in the Journal's Valentina Popp. She is based in Brussels. Hi, Valentina. Good morning.
Hi, Mark. Good to be here.
So, Valentina, tech is already more regulated in Europe. What's at the center of this next step in regulation? How is it different from what's already in place?
Right. So the European Union already has more regulatory frameworks in place for the online world, especially with the 2018 General Data Protection Regulation, which is a sweeping privacy law that obliges tech companies to limit the use of data of people and inform them what the data is being used for. Now what the EU is trying to do is regulate how online platforms behave in terms of having other companies on their platforms, you know, having a level playing field and not abusing their dominant position to quash rivals, but also trying to harmonize a patchwork of national laws in terms of content. So when you have illegal content, so-called fake news, or harmful content, hateful content, terrorism videos, or other such things, that they are taken down quickly, that there is a clear obligation, and that companies also know what they need to do and, you know, to abide by national laws. So it's a kind of a two-pronged approach, and it's very similar to what the US is also discussing. It's just that the EU is a little bit further ahead here.
So from algorithms to free speech, there are so many issues at play here. How will Europe handle enforcing them all?
The European Union has definite powers when it comes to the internal market, to ensuring a level playing field, to ensuring that tech companies abide by competition laws. And on this front, there will be more powers for the European Commission, which is the main enforcer of antitrust law. So whenever a company abuses its dominance, currently the Commission can only launch an investigation against a single company. Now it will be the case that the Commission will be able to launch a whole sector inquiry into the market and order remedies quickly, so we won't have to wait 4 or 5 years until the whole case gets adjudicated by courts. On the content side, it will be so that the Commission will seek to coordinate national enforcement agencies so that there is more of a streamlined and harmonized concept of what is illegal, So on that side, enforcement will stay national and fine levels will also be set at a national level. But the commission seeks to coordinate, so it's not as patchy as it is currently.
And finally, these are American companies with products accessible across Europe. Are the tech companies fighting back against these regulations, and will they comply?
As we've seen with every tech-specific regulation, there is a lot of lobbying efforts, and there was also a public consultation that the Commission has carried out this year for this specific regulatory plan, and all the tech companies have responded, and obviously they are saying that the regulation needs to be as light touch as possible. But ultimately, once the regulation is adopted, what we've seen with data protection regulation, companies do comply. It's very rare that you would have a situation where they would just ignore or have repeat offenses to the point where there would be need for like a dramatic action such as breaking up a company.
Valentina Popp in Brussels. Valentina, thanks for the insight on this.
Thank you, Mark. Good to be here.
And finally, 8 months into the pandemic, working from home is proving to be really uncomfortable. Those at home are often plunking down in broken chairs or using desks that are too shallow. With the pandemic not slowing down and many workplaces shut down for winter, your long-term health may depend on getting your desk set up well. Left unchecked, these ergonomic issues can lead to pain, even an inability to work at all. While some employers are offering stipends for stand-up desks or hosting virtual stretch and dance breaks, here are some things you can do now to improve your posture and your disposition. This includes proper alignment with your eyes to your computer screen. Did you know you should aim for a desk that's 30 to 36 inches deep and at least 3 feet wide? Our Work and Life columnist Rachel Feinzig has many other tips. Just log on to WSJ.com. And that's what's news for this Monday. We're back tonight with a new show. If you like us, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Mark Stewart with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.